Shall we make a start? So, Judy's leading up. Yep. Instead of Bill.
There's a suitor. This is what should be done
by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So, with a boundless heart, should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be, this is life abiding, holding two false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born into this world.
Turn the lights down a bit, please. I prefer the lights down. Perfect. Well, first of all, thank you for coming today. First day back. Toll has asked me to fill it for the times that there are no monks available to give the talk. So I'm not sure how long that will be for. I'm happy to fill in. So, what shall we talk about? One of the things that we've just said here in the Metta Sutta, it says one should sustain this recollection, meaning the whole sutta about loving kindness. But that's not the only recollection that we should try and maintain. There are quite a number, actually. The whole of the suite of meditation subjects that are part of what we call the Satipatthanas, which are effectively meditation subjects concerning the body or meditation subjects concerning the mind, or meditation subjects concerning feelings, or meditation subjects that concern certain aspects of the teachings of the Buddha. There are about 40 of those, different meditation subjects, different recollections. But that's not what I'm going to talk about. Well, I might get round to it, but we'll see where it goes. I'm going to start by talking about something very basic, something simple. This is the first talk this year, so I'll start with something that, like I said, something simple. In addition to all those other recollections, whether it's recollecting the breath or recollecting the elements that make up the body, or the Metta Sutta, or anything else, the Buddha said there are five things that a Buddhist should recollect on daily. So every day, these five things are something which we should turn our attention to. For how long we turn our attention to them, that's a different matter. Because in effect, they're all meditation subjects in their own right. And we can spend 5 minutes and just go through them by rote, simply because we want to do it, because the Buddha said it's a good thing to do it every day. Or we can pay attention to them and get some real benefit out of the daily reflection. And if we reflect on this first thing in the morning, it sets us up for the rest of the day. So what are those five things that the Buddha asked us to reflect on? Well, the first one is aging. We should reflect that this body will get old or older. Some of us will live to old age, some won't. But from the day we're born to the day we die, we will get older. There's no Benjamin Button where you get younger every day. Everybody, every living being, gets older by the day. It's something that cannot be prevented. It's inevitable. Happens to us all. But there's a huge industry that spends billions of dollars. It's called the cosmetic industry, where people get all sorts of procedures done. They buy all sorts of creams, that most of which do absolutely nothing, to stop the aging process. You see adverts on TV, you see adverts in magazines. Buy this cream and you'll look 20 years younger. Have this surgery done and you'll last forever. Cryogenics. Come and have your body frozen and you can live forever. The promise of living, the promise of life, is something that many millions of people around the world value. They want to live longer. They want a better life, but they don't want to die. And especially in the West, where we're so caught up in our appearance, we don't want these wrinkles. Oh, I've got a wrinkle here. Oh, a grey hair there. Better go and buy some dye. In the scheme of things, what difference is that going to make? You're still going to be a day older. It doesn't matter how much you try and cover it up, how much you try and look something that you're not. Age will always catch up with everybody. And you can look at two people of the same age and you can say, oh, one looks young, one looks their age, or another one looks much older, whatever. But that's just looks. It's a value proposition that we make up for ourselves. And in a lot of cases, we subliminally soak in what advertisements and what companies want to tell us about aging and about what looks good and what doesn't look good. We look into magazines and we say, all these fit young people, are they really a reflection of the general society? But people want to look like them. And they spend a lot of money trying to be young, trying to slow down the aging process. There's one thing in keeping fit and supporting one's health. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But when you do it to the extent that you simply want to show off your body, or you want to try and limit the aging process, well, that's when it goes a bit too far, because that's driven out of conceit. The whole of the cosmetic industry is driven by conceit, by vanity. And the only thing that can do is to empty your pockets. From a Buddhist perspective, all those things are insignificant. They're not where life is to be had. They're driven by defilement. These wishes that we have, they're all driven by one form of mental defilement. So they're not, that kind of thought process is not something which we should entertain. It's something which is going to get us reborn. Because of why? Because it's attachment to the body. It's attachment to the very thing which causes us pain and suffering. Which brings me to the next recollection. All beings will suffer in some way or another. So I will suffer. In this lifetime, I will experience pain. I will experience distress. This is the second recollection. This is something which is unavoidable. When the Lord Buddha was growing up, his father was so intent on his son becoming a great warrior, a great emperor, a great leader of men, that the king made sure that any people who were sick in the community were put outside the palace gates. So the prince never saw real aging, real sickness, death. Never experienced it, because his father was so concerned that if his son saw these things, he would become a monk. He would leave and become an ascetic and want to know the answer to why life is like this. And of course, that's exactly what happened. So we can't be in a situation like he was, where he never saw suffering. We see suffering every day. You're all wearing masks. There you go. Did you ask for COVID to come into this country? No. Can you stop it? Not really. It's got a mind of its own. So you can catch disease. You don't have to go out of your way. The body itself will break down. Go out in the sun for too long and you can get skin cancer. Eat the wrong foods and you can have all sorts of problems. Digestive problems, blood problems, liver problems. Drink the wrong kind of drink. Drink a lot of alcohol and see what happens to you. Alcoholic poisoning is not fun. And even if you drink it over a long period of time, you get liver diseases. Yes, you can take medicine. And there's nothing wrong with taking medicine. If you're truly sick, then trying to relieve that sickness is perfectly acceptable. Especially if you're trying to relieve that sickness so that you can be healthy enough so that you can practice your own meditation. That's particularly useful. But if you're taking medication to carry on with a life which is full of defilement, full of anger, full of ill will, full of greed, where you're lying and cheating and causing hurt to other people, then again, what is the purpose of taking that medication? It's to now, instead of taking it for the betterment of yourself and the betterment of your community, you're taking it and going out and committing unwholesome deeds which lead to bad karma. So again, you need to weigh up what it is that you want. When it comes to sickness, what's the point of getting better if you're not going to make your life better, if your mental health is not good? This is part of the daily reflection that all of us should undertake. So it's not just a case of, oh yeah, I'll be sick, yeah, next, what am I going to reflect on next? It's a case of understanding what the implications are of being sick. Of being in pain. Look at those people who are in war-torn Yemen, dying of hunger every day. Their thought process probably consumed by, where can I get a meal? Torment. Put yourself in their place. Nothing but torment. You're lucky that you live in an affluent country and are fairly well off. And you have food in your mouth. Yes, you've got COVID restrictions now, and that's an impost. But compared to some, we're doing really well. And it's easy then to think that because we're doing reasonably well, that life's rosy. Yeah, not too bad. I can put up with it. But it's suffering just the same. It's pain and sickness. And it's only because you've got a bit better karma than some other people around the world that you're in this fortunate position. So you should take advantage of this fortunate position that you're in, where you do have better health, you're not desperate for food, you have access to food, you have access to good medicine. And you should take the opportunity then to do something wholesome with your life, not just from a point of view of the kind of work that you do, but also doing things like practicing your meditation. Because these chances to understand the Dhamma don't come along all that often. You're fortunate. We're all fortunate that we've been able to hear the Dhamma. But lots of people aren't that fortunate. So when it comes to being sick, when it comes to being in pain, when it comes to suffering, we need to look at it from a positive perspective. How can we gain some benefit from this? And the third recollection is, I will die. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter whether you're even a heavenly being, and some heavenly beings live for very, very long periods of time. Inconceivably long periods of time. But nevertheless, their lifetime in that state eventually comes to an end. Eventually, the causes and conditions that lead them to live there, to exist there, come to an end. And when those causes and conditions which brought about that existence cease, then so does that existence. And that's true for us. We're born because of causes and conditions. We call it karma, and we call it rebirth, karma vipaka in Pali. So cause and effect. And we can't escape that, but that's another recollection, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. Death itself is something which is coming to us all. And it's a useful subject to meditate on. It's a useful thing to recollect on death, because it's not doing it out of morbidity. Because you're morbid, you're just interested in death and death only. You do it because you want to understand the nature of life. And at a simple level, if you think, well, I'm going to die, one of the things that you can then turn around and say is, so if I'm going to die, and I don't know when, but eventually I'll die, what am I going to do with my life? How meaningful are going to be those days that I have between now and the day I die? That's up to you. Not up to anybody else. You and you alone. Yes, there are external factors which, you know, will weigh on what it is that you can and can't do. Things like family, things like your job, various things. Friends will say things to you. The peer groups will try and influence you. And you have to weigh all of that up. What it is that you want out of life. How important are those things? How important are other people's opinions to you? Because ultimately, it's up to you to make something of your life, not up to somebody else. So recollecting death is useful in terms of now trying to understand life. We are born to die. So you can ask yourself the question, well, if that's the case, then what causes us to be born in the first place? And that's a whole new meditation subject. It's a whole new process to reflect on. But death will come. And then you have to look at other people and say, well, death will come to them too. So how can I help them? How can I make their lives easier? Not, oh, well, it'll come to me and I'll do what I can for myself. No. What can you do to help alleviate the pain and suffering that others will experience? Because you want to do something useful with your life. by helping others, by being an example. These are all valid reflections. The fourth recollection is that I will be parted from all those people, all those beings, all those things that I love, all those things that I cherish. I will eventually be parted from them. This is inevitable. Sometimes we part with those that we love because they die and leave us behind. Sometimes things that we like break and we're dissatisfied with that. And sometimes it's simply because we die and leave those things behind. But the bottom line here is no matter what we pick, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a material possession, whether it's money, whether it's assets like houses or cars or whatever it may be, we will be parted from them. They cannot be a source of happiness. If they were a source of happiness, then think how unhappy we are when we are parted from them. So if we place our happiness in these external things, then we're doomed to suffer. If we want to be free of suffering, then we have to be free of attachment to all these worldly things. So when we're reflecting on this daily and we think about the nice house that we're in, with a nice car that we've got, with the food in our nice fridge, ready to cook it at our nice stove, then we've got all these possessions, all these things to help make our life easier. We need to reflect on how fortunate we are, but also how much we're reliant on those things. And therefore, the wise amongst us will think we can't afford to be attached because these things break. These things fall into disrepair. These things die. People die. We have a nice relationship. Maybe we even get married. But not all those relationships last. Many of them fall by the wayside, and some of them in an acrimonious way. So someone who we once loved, we may end up now hating. So the status of our relationship with these people, with these things, is dynamic. It changes over the course of our lifetime. Even our family, when we're growing up, you know, we love our mother and our father, but often we fall out with them. In some cases, irreconcilably so. So even when the parents and their children are still alive, sometimes they don't speak. They are parted. And that's only a source of suffering. So you cannot place your wish for happiness in other people, in other things. Other people can help you, they can be supportive, and you can likewise be helpful and supportive to them. But ultimately, it's you that's responsible for your own happiness. Even if you're at work, you know, you have good relationships with people who you work with. You have some not so good relationships. But the bottom line is, it's how you let them affect you. And the way that you respond to people, which is ultimately under your control and ultimately what will determine your future. Because it's the way that you respond to the situation that you find yourself in that determines whether you make good or bad karma, which determines how you will be reborn in the future. So again, this is something that you can reflect on. And the final recollection says, I am the owner of my karma. I can't escape that. I can't give my karma to someone else. I can't do a swap. I'll say to someone, you know, I'll take your good karma, you take all my bad, and that's a real good deal. It doesn't work like that. You commit the deeds which are the causes for which the effects will be felt either in the present or in the future. This is inescapable. Now, this is an interesting point because we can't see that. Very few of us can see our past lives. So it could be easy to say, I don't believe that that's actually right. And that's why you have to have a little bit of faith. Because this is something that all the other things that I've said up to now, you can rationalize and think about them and say, yeah, that's probably true. Or yes, that is true. Karma is a little bit different. Because you can't see it. So you have to have some faith that karma is a law, a universal law. But unlike some other religions where faith, you have to have blind faith, in Buddhism it doesn't work like that. See, karma is all about cause and effect. And when you start meditating and you can slow your mind down, you can see cause and effect taking place now. It's not karma, it's something done in the last life and you feel it in this life or the next. No, you're making karma all the time. Cause and effect is happening all the time. You see something, you hear something, you react to it. You have a thought, causes speech or it causes an action. Cause and effect happens all the time. And so when you can start to practice properly, then you can see karma working. And so you start to get to a stage where your faith is being replaced by wisdom, by understanding. And that's a big difference between that and blind faith. So then you realize that if you can't escape your karma, then you need to practice wholesome deeds, have good speech, good action, good thoughts. Be kind to people. Don't wish them ill will, wish them kindness. Doesn't matter who it is. Keep your precepts. Practice some meditation. Be charitable. Give to those who are needy. This is the way that you advance. This is the way that you make something of your life, which will be a treasure that you will keep within your own heart, these good deeds. And that treasure will be worth more than all the gold, all the diamonds, all the wealth that there is in the world. There is nothing more precious than the good karma that you make through practicing the Dharma. It's the end of the talk. It's the meditation now. So, choose your meditation subject. I'm not going to guide you through any particular meditation. But just choose a subject that you're used to, whether it be following the breath or reciting a parikarma like Buddha, or practicing metta, loving kindness. because the important thing is not really just the meditation subject. It's that you have mindfulness when you're doing it. So you're really trying to sustain and develop your mindfulness. Because mindfulness protects the citta, the heart, the mind, if you like. When you're mindful and you know what you're thinking, you know what you're saying, and you know what you're doing, then it gives you the opportunity to give up unwholesome speech, unwholesome thought, unwholesome actions, and replace them with wholesome ones. Mindfulness is the key. It's the key to having a mind that's calm. It's the key to developing wisdom. Even when you're not meditating, if you can be mindful, mindful when you're walking, mindful when you're reaching for something, mindful when you're driving, mindful when you're standing, sitting, lying down, or walking. If you can be mindful in all four postures, then you're really starting to make some practice, some progress with your meditation. That's your gauge. How mindful are you? Don't rush. Just take your time. Has anybody got any questions? No? You mean I covered that material so well, no one's got any questions at all? Okay, so it's to Judy now to lead us again.
Now let's chant the verses of sharing adoration.
Listen to the goodness that arises from my practice. May my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all the virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent, or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, and surpass is the protection of the Buddha. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all of these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's all right. You're welcome. My act of sharing.
Thank you.